We also have concerns about the lack of payment of their utilities because ADN has not paid utilities since early February.
GCI asks a court to evict the Alaska Dispatch News. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 11th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a $4 million plan for upgrades to the Alaska Permanent Fund headquarters.
If we want to maintain that high level of excellence, we can't keep using 1980 work styles to generate that kind of return.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
The state's largest newspaper is in serious financial trouble. According to a lawsuit filed today, the Alaska Dispatch News is being brought to court by GCI for nearly $3 million, much of it over unpaid bills. And they're asking the court to evict the paper from the building that houses the printing press at a time when ADN has nowhere else to produce the paper. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, media watchers say a combination of industry trends and business mismanagement are putting one of the state's main news sources in jeopardy.
In a complaint filed in state court against ADN's owner and publisher, Alice Rogoff, lawyers for GCI say the trouble goes back to 2014. That's when Rogoff paid $34 million to buy the Anchorage Daily News and merge it with her online news company, the Alaska Dispatch. The deal involved selling the paper's building in Airport Heights to GCI. Rogoff's newly merged media company, Alaska Dispatch News, has its main office in Midtown, but the paper is still printed at a warehouse in the old building. Under the original terms, ADN had 18 months to disassemble the press, fix up the warehouse space, and move out. According to GCI, that still has not happened.
The main concern is the lack of payment for past rent.
Heather Handyside is GCI's head of corporate communications.
We also have concerns about the lack of payment of their utilities because ADN has not paid utilities since early February.
Handyside says in total, ADN owes just under $1.4 million for past expenses and another $1.5 million that they say it'll take to remove the printing press from the property. GCI says that for months, they've been covering ADN's utilities, spending $1,500 a day in electric bills to keep the press running. Handyside says GCI wants to recoup its money and is asking a judge to evict ADN from the warehouse.
At the end of the day, we want the Alaska Dispatch News, the state's largest paper, to be operational and successful. And that is why we have been supporting it over the past 2 years and finding, you know, innovative ways to keep the business going. But we just don't see the progress, and we haven't seen the progress for many, many, many months.
ADN is facing multiple other lawsuits over allegations of unpaid bills and breached contracts. Most publicly, the founder of the original Alaska Dispatch is suing Rogoff for nearly $1 million that he says he's owed as part of a deal they inked on a cocktail napkin. Another lawsuit is less sensational, but more fundamental to the paper's daily operations. Since last year, ADN has been trying to set up a new printing press at a different location. The contractor who was handling renovations at the new space on Arctic Boulevard is suing for more than $500,000 in unpaid work and supplies. Pat Doherty is the former editor of the Anchorage Daily News and left just as the companies were merged. He says that without a new press setup, production of the physical paper is in question if the eviction goes through.
They seem to have really messed up in a way that's got them in a deep hole in terms of expenses, and they still don't have an operational press, and there's no sign that they're going to have an operational press at any time in the future.
Ads in the physical paper are the biggest source of revenue for the company, but those don't appear to be covering costs. The newspaper industry's long-term trend has been declining ad revenues, and so for the last decade, in order to stay in business, companies have had to shrink staffs, scale back operations, and come up with inventive new ways to bring in money. Doherty says that in the 3 years since Rogoff acquired the paper, there's been very little of that.
I've seen nothing new, original, creative, innovative in terms of how to produce revenue.
When the two companies merged, almost no one was laid off, which further added to costs. It's clear that ADN has a cash problem. In court documents, a shortage in cash flow is mentioned as early as 2015 and comes up multiple times as a reason for not being able to cover expenses. This April, Rogoff began putting up assets as collateral with her lender, Northrim Bank. That includes her ownership stake in the paper, along with a Wells Fargo account and funds identified in public records as her marital agreement payment streams. Doherty says it's a tough time for the news business, but lays a lot of the blame on Rogoff's management and business decisions. Alice Rogoff didn't respond to a request for an interview. In a brief statement, she wrote, "The newspaper is in active discussions to keep the company alive and strong for readers." In a recent email to ADN staff obtained by Alaska Public Media, Rogoff wrote that the paper is challenged by changing economic and financial circumstances, and that as a result, she's in discussion with several potential new investors. Details of those deals are not public, but Rogoff wrote that the resolution should become clear within the next few weeks. It's not obvious what comes next, but many people contacted for this story worry Alaska will lose one of its main sources of news and robust reporting. Larry Persily is a former Alaska journalist who's worked in newspapers across the state, including stints at the old ADN. He says if the paper can't pay its bills, it means there's something severely wrong with the current business model, threatening the whole operation.
Losing the newspaper would be a serious loss to Alaska, to Anchorage. You need news organizations to tell us what our elected officials are doing, what's happening at the other end of town where we don't live. So losing another source of that information hurts the community.
ADN's current circulation is a little over 40,000. Recently, it went from a daily to printing 6 days a week. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Hillcorp has reported another spill this week. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation confirmed the spill happened on Monday on the Steelhead platform the company operates in the Trading Bay oil field in Cook Inlet. DEC spokesperson Candace Bressler says 200 gallons of an oil-based drilling mud was released from the platform, of which 2 gallons ended up in Cook Inlet. The cause of the spill is still under investigation, and Bressler says DEC is working with the company to review safety protocols. Hillcorp owns 15 of the 17 drilling platforms in the inlet. Routine tests were performed on Steelhead in June to make sure blowout valves were working properly. A natural gas pipeline running from the platform was the source of a subsea gas leak earlier this year. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation will be renovating its headquarters in Juneau. Its goal is to modernize its offices and help its workers to communicate more easily. It's budgeted to cost $4 million. Supporters of the plan say it may be a small price for a state to pay if it makes a difference in growing the $60 billion fund. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman spoke with the corporation's head about the project.
The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation office looks a lot like other offices, though the computers have more screens. That allows fund managers to keep their eye on the markets. But when CEO Angela Rodell looks around, she sees limitations in space, in the ability for fund workers to communicate, and in the optimal use of technology. She motions toward a long hallway lined with doors.
It feels like a beehive to me right now, right? Lots of little warrens, low ceilings, tight, narrow spaces.
The renovation will open this space up. Some internal walls will be torn down. Rodell will be able to see more of the staff during her frequent walks around the office.
You can see it's like these long, narrow hallways, lots of offices. People sit with their backs to the door. It's very hard. It's unapproachable if you want team work.
Another major reason for the change is to accommodate hiring more workers, which the current office configuration limits. This will allow more of the fund to be managed by corporation employees.
All these walls, ceiling, everything comes down. The light will be allowed to flow through to the rest of the building, so that everybody will have access to a lot of natural light, which, as you know, in Juneau is really important to all of our workspaces.
The Alaska House of Representatives briefly debated in June whether to approve the money for the renovation, which will be drawn from fund earnings. North Pole Republican Representative Tammy Wilson questioned whether the corporation justified the expense. She said there should have been more details about the renovation.
I mean, who spends $4 million without telling us how? That's just crazy in my world. I don't do it for $1,000, much less $4 million.
But a fellow Republican, Lance Pruitt of Anchorage, says the expense was justified. Pruitt says it's important to seek any possible advantage to managing the fund.
I see it as a good investment in ensuring that the people that are helping us to make sure that we have funding to provide for government as well as for our dividends, that they have the means at their disposal to be able to invest our money correctly, appropriately, and in real time.
The permanent fund is coming off a year of major gains, increasing by $7 billion. Rodell says that much of the gains in recent years are due to the value the corporation's staff adds. She says that over the past 5 years, the fund grew more than $4 billion more than if it had been invested passively.
If we want to maintain that high level of excellence, we need to keep reinvesting in the resources. We can't keep using 1980 work styles to generate that kind of return.
The House defeated an amendment to remove the funding by a vote of 31-9 before the legislature passed the capital budget. Some details of the renovation design are still being worked out. Construction is expected to begin later this year. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, creative community solutions for feeding hungry kids.
We pretty well stock the bags so that they have 5 lunch entree items and then breakfast oatmeal and cereal, milk, juice, lots of fruit.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Summer meal programs for getting food to hungry kids don't work in rural areas, especially in Alaska. People in Talkeetna are overcoming that problem with the help of books, buses, and backpacks. This is the first story from Alaska Public Media's new Solutions Desk, a look at what's working to make communities stronger in Alaska. This month, we're talking about solutions for hunger. Ann Hillman has the story.
Filling the summer food gap is a problem nationwide because kids can't get breakfast or lunch at school. The U.S. Department of Agriculture tries to do it by offering free summer meals, but the meals have to be eaten on site somewhere, like at a school or a library, which means the kids have to get there when there's no school bus. Librarian Jerry Denkwalter says when the staff at the Talkeetna Public Library first learned about the summer meals program last year, they were excited to participate.
If kids are hungry, you feed them. That's what you do.
It seemed like a natural fit in the close-knit small town.
The adults are used to bringing their children here because I read to them when they were here, when they were children.
So they tried it out. The problem was that most kids only came to the library once a week for the summer reading program, not every day for the meals. Even the USDA says the summer meals program isn't reaching a lot of kids. Only 1 in 6 who qualify actually participate. And in rural areas, the rates are the worst. It was clear that the program wasn't a good fit for Talkeetna, says Luann Carroll Tisdale, the Upper Susitna Food Pantry Coordinator.
Here's the problem. They can't get to a site every day. There is a lot of working poor here who can't afford the gas.
And Carroll Tisdale wasn't allowed to send the federal meals home with the kids.
So this year I wrote a grant.
With the $8,600 from the Matsu Health Foundation and the Food Bank of Alaska and donated food from community members, she started a backpack program. Instead of going to the library to eat just one meal, each child also goes home with 10 more.
We pretty well stock the bags so that they have 5 lunch entree items and then breakfast oatmeal and cereal, milk, juice, lots of fruit, some veggies, some cheese dippers.
On shopping days, her pickup truck is filled to the brim with items purchased hours away at less expensive stores in Wasilla or Anchorage. Now, about 50 kids show up every week for the library program, up from fewer than 30 last year. That includes 5-year-old Mira Kidd, who's learning about new foods.
It's a cheese monster! I better get away from that cheese monster!
The children eat lunch, then do activities like planting trees or learning sign language. They read some books, too. When they leave, the ones who need it have a bag of food for the week. The idea isn't new. There are backpack programs nationwide, but most only send food home for weekends. Research shows that the programs help entire families, and kids are more likely to attend school on Fridays when they receive their backpacks. For parents like Jody Shook, who's caring for 7 kids from different families this summer, the Talkeetna backpack program is essential.
If it wasn't for this program, then we'd be shopping at Cubby's and going broke feeding kiddos.
Cubby's is the only grocery store near the small town. It's about 14 miles up the main road. Talkeetna is pretty spread out, which presents another problem for feeding kids in the summer. Not every parent can get their children to the library for the weekly program. That's where the next partner steps in, Sunshine Transit. On most days, the small bus line just runs along the main roads. But now, on Thursdays in summer, they go door to door to pick up kids, take them to the library, and return them home. Sarah Russell meets her kids as they get off the bus.
I am super excited about the lunch program. In the past, my kids have just kind of been stuck at home. This gives them an opportunity to get out during the day.
Sunshine Transit manager Kim Schlosser agreed to help the program even before she received extra funding to add the new service.
I said, to just tell me what you need, and we'll have the kids sign up ahead so we know where they live and they know how many are coming, and let's make this happen.
Food is also available for kids that can't make it to the reading program. Parents can pick it up whenever the library is open. Pantry coordinator Carol Tisdale says they're giving out about 115 bags every week. That's over 12,000 meals for the summer. From the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Alaska Energy Authority will continue with its plans for a $46.4 million expansion at its Bradley Lake hydroelectric plant near Homer, following the approval from its board of directors. The Alaska Journal of Commerce reports the board unanimously voted in favor of the expansion this week in Anchorage. With the board's approval, the Alaska Energy Authority can look at developing and financing options for its Battle Creek diversion project. The Energy Office has said the project would add roughly 37,000 megawatt hours per year to Bradley Lake's current power production, equivalent to about 10% of its average annual output. Executive Director Michael Lamb says the project has also received approval from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and is shovel ready. User fees at Delta Junction area state parks will stay the same this summer as the facilities transition to private management. The state awarded permits to K&K Operations to run the Big Delta State Historical Park and to Big Dipper Adventures to operate campgrounds, boat launches, and other facilities at Quartz Lake, Clearwater, Delta, and Donnelly Creek. Northern Region State Park Superintendent Brooks Ludwig says the contractors do not plan to change user fees, but notes that the legislature allows leeway to do so in the future.
For daily parking, right now the charge is $5 per day per vehicle, and the maximum they could charge would be $10 per day per vehicle. Boat launching, right now it's $15 per launch and retrieve. That could go up to $20. Firewood bundles are $8, and it can go up to $15 per bundle. Overnight camping is $15 a night. That can go as high as $30 a night.
Delta area parks generate an average of $80,000 per year, most of which comes from the larger Clearwater and Quartz Lake facilities. Ludwig says the contractors are required to share revenues with the state.
For operating the parks in the Delta area, Quartz Lake, Clearwater, Delta, and Donnelly, the contractor will pay to the state a flat $2,000 permit fee. In addition to that, they have negotiated a 3% of their gross camping revenues and 3% of their gross revenues for canoe kayak rentals at Clearwater State Recreation Site will be earmarked to the state.
Ludwig adds that 3% of profits from Big Delta State Historical Park will go into a maintenance fund.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Founders Day. Every year on August 7th, the Metlakatla Indian community celebrates its founding with a day of art, food, and prayer. KRBD's Emma Atkinson was there to find out why people from every part of the state come back to Annette Island each summer for the event.
A small crowd gathers outside a two-steepled white church. It's early in the day, but the sun is already beating down, glinting off of the lone headstone that stands beside the church. There lies Christian missionary William Duncan, a controversial and key figure in the story of this Southeast community's history.
No matter what anyone may think of him, William Duncan did what he thought was best for us.
David Robert Boxley lives in Metlakatla and explains to the crowd the origins of the town's founder. Mr. Duncan, as he is known, strove to convert the Tsimshian community to Christianity. In 1887, Duncan arrived at Annette Island with about 800 Tsimshians from British Columbia and founded what is now Metlakatla Indian Community, about 15 miles south of Ketchikan. That arrival is marked on August 7th and celebrated as Founders Day. During the wreath-laying ceremony at Duncan's grave, Boxley reads remarks off his cell phone, alternating between English and Shmalyak, Metlakatla's indigenous language.
He loved us, and he worked hard to show us a good way to live.
Boxley asks for a moment of reflection and prayer. Those in attendance bow their heads as a wreath is laid next to the headstone. Boxley is a renowned artist and co-chair of the Hayek Foundation, a nonprofit aimed at preserving the Shmalyak language. The foundation is hosting and co-sponsoring the Founders Day feast later this evening.
Have a wonderful Founders Day, and we're going to get back to work. Thank you.
The day is filled with religious significance. In this small town, the line between the duties of elected officials and dedication to the Christian faith is blurred. There are many schools of thought on how the role of missionaries like Duncan affected Native Alaskan culture. Despite the historical suppression of many Tsimshian customs, the last 30 years has seen an increase in Tsimshian cultural pride. The interior of the longhouse is itself evidence of the ongoing cultural revival in Metlakatla. The floor and ceiling are made of gleaming cedar. Artwork and handmade artifacts line the walls. Founders Day is about more than just the town's beginning, though. It serves as a homecoming of sorts for those who were raised in Metlakatla.
My son did a good job.
David A. Boxley is David Roberts' father. The senior Boxley was raised in Metlakatla. He lives in Seattle now, but comes back every year for Founders Day. The father and son team have carved many totem poles together, and the elder Boxley's carving work is on display at institutes and museums all over the country. He gestures to a pole just down the street.
My son and I did that totem pole right there for all the women who started the children's dance groups years ago.
He talks excitedly about the schedule of events for the day, including a parade, foot races, and dance performances.
It's like 4th of July anywhere else, you know?
Standing beside William Duncan's grave, Boxley thinks the missionary changed the Tsimshian community for the better.
Well, it's really important, you know, our culture, our tribe, you know, when this man came among our people, changed our future. You know, it absolutely changed our future. And his history is, since he was 30 years old, is our history.
Hundreds of Metlakatlans head toward town. Around the street corner and into the ball field comes the parade procession. A little girl dressed as Disney Princess Moana sits on top of a papier-mâché canoe. Representatives from the Tsimshian tribes follow, dressed in traditional regalia and beating taut tan drums. Kimberly Wellington is part of the Wellington clan. She says they are descended from Arthur Wellington Claw, the man who taught William Duncan to speak Shmalyak. Wellington and her two sons are wearing matching purple shirts with her family's crest and Shmalyak words emblazoned on the front.
The saying on the top means love one another, which was my grandmother's favorite saying.
Thank you.
And so this is in honor of her.
Many, many people milling around the ball field are wearing these matching shirts. Wellington says making t-shirts has become a Founders Day tradition for the Wellington clan.
Every year we do some sort of, with the design, with some sort of remembering somebody within the family.
On the 130th anniversary of Metlakatla's founding, it's clear that Tsimshian residents are intent on keeping traditions alive, even newer ones that call for matching t-shirts. For AK, I'm Emma Atkinson.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Sierra Anderson from Nome. Anderson is a junior in high school who hopes to study architecture after graduating.
It looks like a lot of fun to like design an own house that no one's ever thought of before and just like build your own stuff. I think it started when we built our own cabin out at Nome. So I kind of just like stood there looking at my dad and my uncle like cutting out the boards and like putting it all together, and it just seemed really cool to me because like it's a huge puzzle when it comes out in the end. It's just like your own house or your own cabin. Yeah, I have been outside the state twice, once in D.C. for a school trip and another time in Florida to see family. Their like structure of the building is a lot thinner down in the lower 48 because like, you know, it's hotter. But in Alaska, we have to do like outside wall insulation, inside wall. So it's like a lot thicker walls up in Alaska and smaller too to like conserve the heat. But like down in D.C., there's like all these big open buildings. When we went down to Washington, D.C., there was a group of people who thought we had polar bears as pets. They're like igloos as houses and stuff. We have an actual house. We have actual cars. We don't always use dog sleds. So after work, after my parents' work, we'd probably go out and berry pick. But one time we went on a berry picking trip and came back with a moose. So it's kind of just like whatever happens, happens, so yeah. We went for salmon berries, came back with a moose, which is, it was funny. We can drive out and there's a bridge we can go bridge jumping off of. We can go and ride four-wheelers on the beach. In the winter, we can ride the snow machines and sled down the hill, so, or the mountains. So it's kind of like we're isolated, but we have a lot of activities to do because we got used to it and we just use our surroundings so it doesn't feel so isolated.
Sierra Anderson lives in Nome. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emma Atkinson and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zechariah Hughes and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.